My name is Jonah Ogles. I'm a reporter for the White Lake Beacon, and I am here with Dave Sipka today to ask questions about Montague School's bond proposal. Dave, you want to introduce yourself?
Yes, I'm Dave Sipka. I'm superintendent of Montague Area Public Schools, and I have been with Montague for the last couple of years and challenged immediately with some projects that needed to be completed. And that's why we've taken this, or and are going to take this, to the voters on May the 5th.
Why don't you first off explain the bond and what it's going to do and the price tag for that?
Okay. In Montague, we have two proposals that we'll take to the voters on May 5th. The first proposal is the bigger of the two, and it is for $19,745,000. And that proposal includes a lot of stuff. It's the building a new early childhood center that will house both pre-kindergarten and kindergarten. We'll also hold the Head Start program and the Great Start program and early childhood special education. That will be a 38,000 square foot building that will be built just north of our current middle school. Then early elementary, which now houses pre-K through fifth grade and has over 700 students, that will be renovated. We're going to remodel some classrooms. One is going to become what's called a learning lab with a lot more technology in it. We're going to install some educational technology, do some general remodeling, do some site work, especially a new drop-off point. The traffic flow around the elementary building just isn't very good. At the middle school, we're going to have some renovations as well. We have over 100 windows that have lost their thermal pane and are actually leaking heat and get all fogged up. We're going to add a new learning lab at the middle school and a new locker room. And that's mainly because years ago, when the last time that the middle school was renovated, we didn't have football, and now there's just a requirement for some added space. Up at the high school, we're going to do some renovations again, adding some technology and a learning lab there, remodeling a classroom to become what's called a large group instruction area. And then a couple of other added pieces, a new operations transportation center, that'll be about 25,000 square feet to be built out on Eilers Road on property that the district already owns. And that's to try and get the operations center out of the kind of the center of town and into an area away from a lot of homes, but also to be able to expand it so that we can house our buses in there as we have for decades in the past. It's just that the old building that's now about 55 years old is just becoming dilapidated, and to renovate that building would just cost so much. And then we're going to do just a little bit update some of the mechanical systems out at Rothbury School, which now houses an alternative high school program. That's all under Proposal 1. And then the second proposal is for $1.275 million, and that is to update the athletic fields. And that includes the softball and baseball field renovations, and also adding synthetic turf to the football field. And all of this will be done with no increase in the current millage rate. We'll just be extending what taxpayers are now paying out for about another 7 years.
Okay. Well, let's get to some of the questions. We had some readers. The first one About tech improvements, a reader asks, didn't you do that with the last remodel? I'm a computer user and I know tech hasn't changed since the remodels, with the exception of Windows Vista, which you really don't want.
Well, she's probably right on that. You know, really, technology is something that schools have to continuously look at. And I think schools are kind of like businesses. If you don't keep up with technology, you will be behind the eight ball. She's right in that we did some tech improvements with the last remodel, but that was really a partial update. Some computers were purchased and some cabling was done. But now, almost probably 8 years later, we need some new servers because of the added capacity that we have with all that's being done with technology now, even compared to just 8 years ago. But also some of the programs that we have, CAD and robotics, some of the things that we're doing in biology, some of the things that we're doing in business, some of the things that even the elementary kids are doing in multimedia projects just require more power in the computers, power that we don't currently have with what we have.
Right. Now, the computers you do have now are kind of second generation. They were bought secondhand, right?
We have kind of a hodgepodge of computers in the district, some that were purchased back about 8 years ago in the last bond, some that even precede the last bond that we've still been using, but they just don't have very good capacity anymore for the kind of programs that we need. And then we did go out and purchase over 100 computers from a school district in our county that was getting rid of them. And by doing so, we really updated our computers by about six generations, which is kind of sad when you think about it. We took somebody else's cast-offs and actually improved our technology. And we hope that this will at least get us through for a couple of years until we're ready to spend hopefully some bond money.
Okay. Another question from a reader about the Early Childhood Center. The reader asks, with declining enrollment, why? I foresee either an underutilized building or a building used for fluff in the future.
Well, you know, it's a good question, a question that comes up about declining enrollment. What the public doesn't understand typically is that enrollment doesn't decline just in one grade level, just in the kindergarten kids coming to us. We're seeing a drop in of a few students at each grade level. But a few students isn't enough to really allow us to close even a section of a class down. What we're seeing is just maybe a drop in a couple of classrooms of maybe one student in a variety of classrooms. So it really doesn't have that great of an impact. Plus, the other thing that we have to realize is that early elementary has had 700 kids in it for the last couple of years, and we see that number maintaining through the next few years, and that building is really overcrowded. The real big push right now has been for early elementary in the state of Michigan. And we just see that the requirements for early elementary will increase over time, and we just don't have the room to handle that.
Another question about artificial turf. The reader asks, I know I'm with the majority about disagreeing with this decision. When that field was a soccer field, it was the best soccer field in the county, so I know there is a good plot of land there, and I am concerned with messing with Mother Nature. Have you read about football players in Texas coming down with staph infections from playing on artificial turf?
We've heard about everything you can hear about artificial turf, and we try to ask as many experts as we can. First of all, it's my understanding that that wasn't a soccer field where the current football field is. The soccer field was close to that, but it wasn't on that same spot. And then what we have to realize, too, is that when that football field was made, all of the soil on the football field was amended. And actually, they brought in some dirt that was from where the new auditorium and the administrative district office wing is now. They transferred that dirt out to the football field, and they mixed in some sand and some clay, and it turns out it's just not that good of soil. So the clay right now is being compacted, and it's making every year that football field has gotten harder and harder and as a surface. So eventually we're going to have to amend that soil out there anyway. The other thing about messing with Mother Nature, we're finding that thousands and thousands of schools are going to synthetic turf across the United States, because Mother Nature hasn't been good for football playing surfaces. They're constructed, they're costly to maintain, typically for just a few events a year that are held on them. The thing about staph infections on playing surfaces from Texas, I tried to research that a little bit and I couldn't find anything on it, but the one thing that we heard is that some of the early synthetic surfaces that were designed years ago may have been designed in a way that did lead to housing. It didn't allow the soil or water or spit or vomit or whatever that might be, or blood, to even drain in those fields. What we're seeing now are we're in something like the 100th generation of synthetic turf over the last 10 or 15 years. And what we're seeing is that this turf that we're talking about putting in at Montague will drain really well. And they said actually it will drain better than our current football field.
Why hasn't basic maintenance been kept up? Don't you include basic maintenance in your annual budget?
Well, this may be a false assumption that we don't have basic maintenance. We do. We have two maintenance workers in the district, and then about nine custodians. So those people hit the buildings every day. There have been some maintenance issues that are just such large projects, and they're too costly to do with the operational funds that we have. In the state of Michigan, there is a state statute that says that school districts can only spend 20% of the foundation allowance actually on buildings and maintenance and stuff like that. So they're kind of handcuffed across the state of Michigan in trying to do large projects with the operational money that we get from the state.
Another question, how much of the 19.75 million is for the Early Childhood Center?
About $8 million for the new school. This school will have a lot of green technology in it, and will be built in such a way to allow the school to be built on to it in the future if needed.
Are the Great Start, Head Start, and Kid Stop staffed by MAPS union teachers?
No, they're not. Those are programs that are either federally funded or are funded through the White Lake Area Community Ed program.
Why doesn't the board simply add a second floor to the northeast side of Early Elementary?
That's interesting. Some school districts are looking at building onto their buildings or building second stories. Number one, you have to make sure that the building was designed to do that in the first place. But secondly, about 10 years ago, the board made a very conscientious decision not to add on to Early. Elementary buildings with 700 kids just don't work very well. Typically, in the state of Michigan and throughout the country, they're looking at trying to create smaller schools where you can give a little more personal attention, and by adding on to the Early building, it just doesn't make much sense. The recommendation now from the state of Michigan also is that a building with 500 students should be on a site that has 18 acres to allow for enough parking and enough green space and enough playground area, and for whatever other kinds of needs that the school might have. But we have a building that has 700 kids on a site that is only 11 acres. So already we're 7 acres behind the 500 student mark. So the board just made that decision 10 years ago and have really endorsed it year after year that they're just not going to add on to that building anymore. It's too big.
Okay. What additional bus, cafeteria, and office staff are needed for the Early Childhood Center?
That's a question, it's a very good question, because it comes up from time to time. If you're adding a new building, won't you have to have hire a lot more staff? The answer to that, I think, is no, we're not planning on adding a lot more staff. For instance, with our custodial crew right now, with the 9 people that we have, we're going to give them some equipment that will make their work much more efficient, and so that we'll be able to move a staff member over to that smaller building. We believe that we have staff on hand right now to handle the administrative duties. We're going to have to take a second look at the secretarial staff and see, but the secretarial staff could be a position that is jointly owned by the district and by White Lake Area Community Ed for the Great Start and other programs that exist.
Sure. What classes would be involved in the future expansion of the Early Childhood Center?
Well, we're not really sure, but we're looking in our crystal ball, thinking that if the numbers do increase in the future, if the state of Michigan does get back to seeing the number of students increase, we could add first and second grade and really make that a pre-K through second grade building, and then have an intermediate elementary building, and then a middle school and a high school. That would make some sense.
Okay, another question from a reader. Where will the additional money come from to pay for the added operating costs and maintenance costs of the Early Childhood Center?
As we've mentioned throughout the question and answer period today, we're going to make our custodians and maintenance folks a little more efficient by what we do. And that will save some money in each of our buildings, we believe. Just a case in point, when I came here this past year, we purchased, for lack of a better way to say it, a Zamboni machine. And what that does is it's something that our custodians drive actually up and down the long hallways that we have, and it cleans the floor, washes the floor, and vacuums the floor at the same time. I asked one of our custodians, I said, how much time did that save you a night? And she said 3 hours, just by that one piece of equipment. So we believe that, you know, making our staffs a little more efficient, a little more up to date, instead of trying to do everything by hand, will have the monies necessary. The other thing is that I think a new building has some components in it that will be very easy to clean. For instance, part of the plan right now is that only a portion of the floors would be carpeted. That'll save on some long-term costs for the district and replacement of carpets and so on. So we hope that it'll be a little bit easier to clean.
And the reader also asks, if the operating budget is strained now, won't it be worse if you have to heat and maintain another building?
Well, the great thing is that the added building that we would be looking at heating and maintaining would be the Early Childhood Center. And the heat in that building will be geothermal. So once again, the heat actually is generated from the ground. Plus, there are some other green technologies in there that's going to make this building much more efficient than probably any building that we have on our campus right now. The other thing about this is I think we're going to build some of those efficiencies in place in our district that will save time and money that we can now divert to the new building. So we're really hopeful that we have a good business plan for this.
The next question has to do a little bit with all-day kindergarten, which a lot of people are talking about. The reader asks, will it now be possible to drop off a kindergartner or pre-K child from 6 a.m. to 6 p.m.? If so, please name studies that show this is in the best interest of the child.
The answer to the first question is really, right now we have that same program that kids can come to early elementary for. A 6 a.m. to 6 p.m. Program. So it really isn't changing anything. It's just moving that program to a better site to allow us a little more flexibility over at early elementary. I hear a lot of people saying that having kids go to all-day daycare programs isn't good, you know, and I'm not really going to debate that. I don't know whether it's good or not. I think you have to look at each individual family's situation. I know that we have a number of single-parent families in the community where this is their only hope is to have their kids in a very safe and secure location where they can be nurtured and be in the midst of other kids and be fed. You know, but for some other families, I'm sure that they don't want their kids in all-day programs. Mm-hmm. So it kind of is really up to the individual. But it's a program that's offered already.
Okay. Taxable value is up 4.4% this year. The reader asks, won't this cover the loss of state aid due to the half-day kindergarten and pre-K?
That's kind of a misunderstanding of how schools are funded. We're no longer funded on the homeowner's state equalized valuation. We're funded through the sales tax that occurs in the state of Michigan. It's the 6% sales tax that you and I pay on items and goods. So that's the thing that's gone down in the state of Michigan recently is the sales tax, and unfortunately that's why we're not seeing an increase in our operational income. Taxable value doesn't pay for operational expenses. Operational expenses really comes from the per pupil foundation allowance that's generated through the 6% sales tax in the state of Michigan.
Okay. Next question. The UAW and auto executives are giving back salary and benefits from their contracts, the reader says. Would MAPS teachers also agree to a wage freeze in this economy, and have they been asked to do so?
The person asking this question may be confusing bond money with operational money again. Contract negotiations begin next year in Montague, and the bond really doesn't have anything to do with wages since that money can't be used for salaries and wages. That comes from the foundation allowance that's generated through the sales tax.
The next question is a big one. A lot of things included in it. The reader asks, I would like the cost per student grant amount, even though I could probably find out easy enough. The current number of kindergartners, the current number of pre-K students, the salaries of kindergarten teachers, so that someone smarter than me can cipher an accurate savings or cost. A lot in there.
There is. Right now, just a round figure, it's about $7,300 for the per pupil grant amount. And we have 55 students in our developmental kindergarten program called Young Fives, and 115 students in the kindergarten program. We see those numbers being fairly constant next year again. I think what the questioner is asking is how much is really going to be lost if we stayed with a half-day program. And I think he or she would like to have some kind of a calculation. And it's very complex, but if we don't move to an all-day program, we'll lose 50% of our funding. And when you multiply 50% of about 170 students, that's a chunk of money, upwards of over $200,000. And so we feel like we can't, we really can't afford to do that. As a matter of fact, the number is over $600,000 of loss income if we had to lose half of the per pupil allowance for 170 students.
Okay. And this next question, I think you started to touch on there. How much money would be lost by staying at half day, which would be that $600,000
a month? It'd be over $600,000. How much extra money would it cost to go to full day? At that point, I think we're probably talking about one additional teacher. And we calculate that for a first-year teacher with a salary and benefit package of a little over $50,000. So the difference between losing $612,000 or spending $50,000 more makes good business sense to us at this point,
right,
to move to an all-day program.
Okay. But again, that money, that's an operational budget.
Yes, it is.
It's not included in the bond.
Yep, it really doesn't have anything to do with the bond, other than the fact that if we move to all-day programs, we're going to have to build.
Okay, and that would be the early childhood.
Yes.
Okay. Back to the turf question. How long will the artificial turf last? Is turf safe? What's the financial justification for turf?
Those are good questions, and questions that have come up again and again, because people don't know a lot about artificial turf. But I think they're going to find out a lot more in the next 10 years as we see lots of districts around us moving toward that. Artificial turf, our experts are saying right now that most lasts anywhere from 10 to 15 years. 15 would be on the high side, and 10 would probably be more the average. Is turf safe? We studied that question quite a bit before we made the decision to move to turf, and we read as much as we could about it. We found studies that indicate that turf, synthetic turf, is much safer than natural turf because it's a little softer, a little spongier. It absorbs collision to the ground a little bit more, so it's safer on knees and on ankles. And again, we haven't found, in certainly the most recent generations, any kind of concerns about infections or anything like that coming from synthetic turf. The financial justification for turf is really a calculation. And this is what we did. We went back and looked at how much money we spend on natural turf during the course of the year. And we added in the cost of mowing the lawn, fertilizing the lawn, aerating the lawn, watering the lawn, taking the paint that is required for football games and lining the football field. How much does that cost? And during game weeks, it typically takes anywhere from a day and a half to 2 days for one of our staff members, one of our two maintenance workers, to go out and line the field. And we looked at his hourly income and benefits and the whole package. And we determined that it was $30,000 a year that we spend in maintaining the football field natural turf. And when we looked at that, we did a real easy calculation. We determined how many events are held on the football field now. And we included the peewee football on Saturdays that are held four times during the year. We included the JV football games and the varsity football games and a couple of band events that take place there, and even graduation exercises. Determined that there were about 30 events a year. So 30 events goes into $30,000, $1,000 an event. That's about what it costs us. So the justification financially is that if we had synthetic turf, we know districts that went to 100 to 200. We even have a district that said they went to 300 events on their football field compared to the past. And I think that district included soccer in that compilation. So when we look at it on a per event cost, we find that, you know, we can pay back. The payback period is really about 6 years.
And you touched on it there, how long until the turf would pay for itself is the next question.
Yeah, we're really anticipating about a 6 to even 7 or 8 year payback, but on the average probably be about 6 years.
Okay. And the next question, when will we have to replace the turf and how much will that cost?
Well, it probably goes back to the question about how long does the turf last. And we're looking at 10 to 15 years for the surface. The good thing is when you replace the turf, you don't have to replace all the subsurface work that has been done. So really, you're just replacing the carpet. And that carpet, the low estimate is about $300,000 a year, but it could be as much as $300,000 to replace it, but as much as $450,000 as well, depending on what kind of turf you have.
The next question was, what is the cost of the bond proposal, which you've touched on before?
But just to reemphasize, proposal one is for $19.745 million, and proposal two is for $1.275 million. So it's just about $21 million total.
Okay. And when does the current bond expire?
Back in 2001, when the voters approved the bond, that was a contract with the voters, really, for a 29-year, 10-month payback period. So it went all the way to 2030. This coming bond proposal would extend the payment period out to 2037. So it's really asking the voters to go 7 more years beyond what the original contract with the voters was.
Okay. And you just mentioned the proposed bond. When would it expire is the next question. It would be 2037.
2037, yes.
Next question, reader asks, how much additional taxes will be paid by extending the bond that 7 years?
Well, that's a difficult question to answer because it's really based on what a person is paying for taxes now. The great thing about these two proposals are that they wouldn't increase the millage rate at all. And that's a difficult concept for some people to imagine. You know, how can we do this without, you know, paying more? Well, you're actually paying more down the road. You're paying it longer. Not really more, you're paying it longer. So you would really have to calculate that on a per home basis. Whatever the homeowner is paying now would be what the homeowner would pay next year and would pay, you know, probably in 2030 or 2037. Okay. The thing to remember about this is that bonds often get paid off a lot quicker. So as homeowners' value increases, the school district actually pays off the bond faster because the land and homes are generating more money in essence. And as businesses come into the community, that would pay off the bond quicker as well. So the reality is, because taxable value increases, we pay it off sooner. And then school districts typically, and Montague has done this, they refinance their bonds so that they get a better interest rate, and that saves taxpayers millions of dollars over the life of the bond.
Sure. Now, just to clarify for myself here, you mentioned earlier that schools were funded by the sales tax.
Yes.
And now you're talking about taxable value, but the sales tax funds the school's operational budget.
Yes.
And the taxable value going up, that has to do with the millage rate.
Yes.
Okay.
And that's what pays off the bond. So,
okay.
School finance is really a difficult concept because oftentimes you're talking about different pools of money and where does that money come from. And so to explain it in one easy setting is often nearly impossible.
Yeah.
But
the next question goes back to technology. How long would the technology in this bond proposal last, and how long until we would need new technologies?
Well, this is going to be a guess, but an estimate is typically technology in schools lasts roughly about 7 years. I think that's the average around in most states right now. So chances are that at some point in the future, new technologies will be needed. My suggestion to the district is to get into a kind of a revolving plan where we purchase a little bit of technology each year, so we don't have to purchase a lot all at once. It just seems to be a better business plan for our district.
Sure. So the bond money set aside for technology wouldn't all be spent that first year on technology. It would be a little bit 1 year and a little bit down the road.
Yes.
Okay.
Yep. Using the plan that I'm suggesting, we would do some purchases up front, probably for things like servers that would house a lot of stored information. That if those servers go down, and those servers typically have a life expectancy of about 7 years, if we lose those servers, then we lose a lot of information. So our hope is to build up some redundancy, also some backup for the information that we store.
Okay. The next question, how much of the bond proposal will go towards academics versus extracurricular activities?
This is a tough question to answer with an easy answer. I think you have to look at both proposals. I'm going to start with the second proposal because most people see what we would be spending the bond money on in that proposal as extracurricular. That proposal for $1.275 million would be for the football field, synthetic turf, the renovations of the softball field and the baseball field and repairing dugouts and things like that. Mm-hmm. Under Proposal 1, basically all of it would be for academics. The only exception to that might be if you look at a bus garage or an operations center and say that doesn't have anything to do with academics. And the cost of that project is about $2.95 million. And yet, on the other hand, if you don't have good maintenance, good operations, and good transportation in the district, you know, then that affects academics down the road. So I guess everything in Proposal 1, I would say, really supports academics.
Okay. And so the second proposal that deals with, you know, extracurricular, you can classify that as. The justification for doing it again is to save money from the operational funds.
Yes. What it will do, it'll just help us to take that $30,000 that we now spend just on the football field mm-hmm. and be able to transfer it back into the academic program.
Question about kind of some green features, I guess, of the bond. Reader asks, will there be any energy-saving features as part of this project?
Yes, we have several green technology projects that will be going on. Just a couple as examples. In the bond proposal from last year, we had a good deal of air conditioning that was included in that proposal for school buildings as academic programs are extended into the summer. But as we met with teachers and community members, they said, well, couldn't you take some of that air conditioning out and put some green technology in, like solar louvers that would cover some of the windows in the summertime or late spring and early fall that would prevent the heat buildup in some of the classrooms. So we're going to do that. Another example would be we're proposing a geothermal heating system for the new early childhood center that will actually pull the heat out of the ground and should provide some cost savings for the district in the future, but it's also very green. Some of the other things are how we build our roofs in the new building, how we have lighting in the new buildings. Those are all green technologies that we think will really benefit the district for years to come.
You say taxes will not go up, but you are extending our taxes. Isn't that a form of taxes going up?
Yep, there's no way around that one. It is. The millage rate will not go up, but the taxes will be extended. So yes, the person who asked this question is exactly right. You know, we are asking the voters to, in essence, increase their taxes just by extending the current rate for another 7 years. The one thing I vowed when I came to Montague as superintendent is that I wouldn't be asking the taxpayers to increase what they're paying already. But this is the best way that the state allows school districts to come up with capital project money that we have right now is to extend the current millage rate.
Next reader question, is this a good time to ask for a bond?
You know, that's a great question, and I'm glad that somebody asked that. This is really an excellent time to ask for a bond. A lot of people think it's horrible because of the current economic crisis. But you have to sit back and really analyze how this bond will be paid out. Because we're extending the current millage rate for 7 years, that means that next year the millage rate doesn't increase. You know, your taxes really don't change as a result. If you vote yes. If you vote no, the tax rate doesn't go down. It doesn't change your taxes either. So, you know, the way we look at this is that this is a great time because, number one, you get excellent bids on the projects that you're trying to do because people are hungry out there. All of our construction folks are hungry, masons, electricians, plumbers, and so they're hopefully going to give us a really good bid mm-hmm. on some of these projects. The other thing is that, you know, we're really getting our best bang for our buck. What this bond is asking is for people to make an investment in the community for some long-term changes. this district hasn't built a new building in over 50 years, and it's time that we begin looking long range for where this district is going to go, and we just think that having a bond issue right now is kind of like a Montague stimulus package. It will provide work for some area contractors, and by bringing other people into the community, it will hopefully help our gas stations and our restaurants and Montague Foods and everybody else who has a business here.
If the bond is not approved, what will Montague Schools do to address some of the issues it faces, issues like technology, space at the elementary school, full-day kindergarten, et cetera?
This is a great question. I'm glad that someone asked this too, because there are no great answers to it. I wish I had a magic wand that I could wave over our district and all the other districts in the state of Michigan, but the problem is, you know, we have some specific needs that will be really hard to address if this bond doesn't pass. But here's a couple of thoughts. You know, we could move our fifth grade over to our middle school, to MBC. The problem with that solution is that now with the added kindergarten and Young Fives programs that we have to put in at early, it doesn't decrease the space crunch that we currently have at early. It just exacerbates the problem by now crowding NBC. Our middle school would be very crowded if we had to move our fifth grade over. So we go from one crowded building now to two crowded buildings. And then we really don't have any other space. Even if we use that plan, we don't have any other space if we have to add a classroom because of fluctuating class sizes or increased enrollment. So our backs are really to the wall. There isn't a good answer for technology. We spend so little right now on technology because of the cost of that capital project that we would be hard-pressed. We just might be stopping the problem by going out and purchasing secondhand equipment again at some point in the future. You know, we're not going to have a good solution for the traffic flow problem at early because that will require some dollars that we don't have. So, you know, those questions will not go away. And all my plea to the community is every so often you just need to invest in the public buildings that you have. And those public buildings might include a fire barn, could include City Hall, it could include the library, it could include the schools as well.
Mm-hmm. A reader asks, isn't it misleading to say that full-day kindergarten is mandatory?
That's a question that has come up repeatedly too. And even our legislators are having a hard time answering that question. We've put the question to our legislators saying that it is a mandate, and the response of, you know, one of our state legislators is, no, it's not a mandate, it's a choice, because you can choose not to get half of your funding. Mm-hmm. But that's not much of a choice in our eyes. In essence, we're being forced to expend all-day programs or to lose half of our funding. So I guess you could say it's not mandatory, but we just can't afford to lose $600,000 a year and still do the things that we're hoping to do for our kids.
And you touched on this a little bit earlier about saying that this was kind of a stimulus project for Montague, but a reader asked, will local businesses get a chance to do the renovation and additional construction work?
Yes, when we interviewed Triangle Construction Company as our construction manager, that was something specific that we asked them, that that they would go out and actually seek bids from local contractors So we're asking all of our local contractors to bid on these projects, and hope that they, you know, give us a good bid, and that we can again kind of create that Montague stimulus package by putting those folks to work. So we're really hopeful that we're going to have a lot of local people working on this.
And will any of the money from the bond be used for teacher salaries?
I'm glad that somebody asked that question, because it's really confusing. Mm-hmm. Bond monies by state statute cannot, and I'll repeat, cannot be used for teacher salaries or for operational expenses. So the answer to that is a very, very specific no. It cannot be used for teacher salaries.
Okay. And you mentioned earlier that the reverse is also true. The operational monies, there's a limit as to what can be spent on major construction projects like this.
Yes. You know, I think a lot of our public has a lot of false assumptions about schools and how they operate and what you can do with the money. Oftentimes we have a lot of rules and regulations that govern us, and we can only spend money in certain areas. So the state gets very specific about how schools can spend their money.
What is the timetable for construction if the bond is approved? Will the education of the kids here be disrupted by construction?
I'll take the last question first. And that is that, no, we're not anticipating any disruptions to any of the kids' education by construction. The timetable for this is going to be that once the bond is approved by the voters, there'll be about a six-month preparation period for our architects and construction folks to pull all the documents together and do all the studies that need to be done to prepare sites. At that point, all of these projects would then go to bid. And then, really shortly after the bids have been approved, which would probably be early of 2010, construction could start on a couple of the sites. For instance, the Operations Transportation Center, which will be a new building, and the Early Childhood Center, which will be a new building. Those projects could start right away because they really will be away from the rest of the schools. The renovations to the schools will most likely be done totally during the summer months of probably a couple of successive years.
And if voters do approve the bond, how long until the school system is asking for another?
I like that question because that really gets to the heart of school funding. I'm just going to offer my guess. I'm going to guess that in probably 7 to 10 years, there's going to be another superintendent and another school board that will come forward and say, you know what, we have to have some renovations done in the district or some new technologies, and we're asking our voters to most likely extend their millage rates, again, either for a short time, maybe a year or two, or could be longer. Right now in the state of Michigan, bonding is about the only way that school districts can get the money needed to do these capital projects. As we've stated many times over the questions and answers today, we have limits on how much we can spend for renovations out of our operational costs. And currently, the only other viable source for income for a district would be through something called a sinking fund, which has a terrible name to it. But a sinking fund is basically asking people to increase their millage rate for a small period of time, anywhere from typically a year to 20 years, and typically for a small millage rate increase. It could be a quarter of a mil, it could be up to 5 mils. Right now, as I said, I don't want to go and ask our taxpayers to increase their taxes at all. Mm-hmm. So that just doesn't seem like a good plan for us.
Okay. And the final question, how much total interest will Montague pay on the bond issue?
Right now, over a 30-year period, we'll be paying about $15 million for the bonds that we're asking for. But on top of that, we're going to pay about $6 million in interest to the school bond loan fund. And let me briefly explain this, if I can. districts pay back bonds through the taxable value of the homes and land in the community. But oftentimes, the taxes that are raised in a community can't pay the full payment back for a bond. So Michigan has set aside some money for school districts called the School Bond Loan Fund. And it's actually where we're borrowing from that fund to pay the added costs that our tax dollars can't raise. Let's see if I can put it into reasonable terms. Let's say taxes generate $1 million a year in Montague. But the cost for repayment of our bonds, our payments are $1,100,000 a year. Well, how do we get that extra $100,000 to make our payments? We borrow from the school bond loan fund. So in essence, we're borrowing again to pay back the payments for the bond.
Okay. So the total would be the 15 from the interest and then an additional 6.
Yes. It's costly, but it's very much like the cost of your home. If you look at the cost of what you bought your house for, and then you looked at your 30-year mortgage and found out how much you actually paid in your monthly payments, you'd find out that you were paying quite a bit more in the interest costs. And unfortunately, that's what we're doing here too.
Well, thank you, Dave, for taking the time to meet with us. We appreciate it.
It's good. And I welcome any further questions as well from community members. All they have to do is give us a call at school, and we'd be happy to answer their questions.
Okay. And why don't you just remind voters the date of the vote and where they should be voting?
The date of the vote is Tuesday, May 5th. They will be voting at their local precinct. And I'll just point out that years ago, all bond elections and board elections were held at the school district. That's no longer the case. You'll be voting at the precinct that you usually vote for when you go to vote for President of the United States and other things.
All right. Thank you again.
Thank you.